Support for this program comes from the Minnesota Arts and Culture Heritage Fund. Live from the University of Minnesota, you are listening to Radio K's Culture Q, the Twin Cities arts and cultural program providing you the stories of Minnesota that you won't hear anywhere else. I'm your host, Matthew Curtis, and thank you so much for joining us. This week we're exploring the beauty of nature. The leaves are falling, the snow is on its way, and there is so much to be admired around us. Now, it would be great if Minnesota had more than two seasons, you know, winter and nearly winter. But anyway, Katie Bolin harvests the apple orchards of Minnesota for a story. Aaron Bolton listens to music on a rainy day. And I interview an EDM star, Porter Robinson, about his debut album, Worlds. And it starts right now on Radio K's Culture Q. It may not be no pumpkin spice latte, but heading to the apple orchard in September is definitely a lot of people's fall favorite. Each year, adults and kids alike flee the city to partake in a country tradition that has seemingly been around since apple-picking days of Adam and Eve. Producer Katie Bolin visits a local orchard to experience the tradition for you.
My favorite part about the apple orchard is the raspberry part. Just having fun going on the hayride.
I like the animals and just picking in the outdoors.
The playground.
Maybe feeding the animals.
The hayride.
Apple picking.
Afton Apple Orchard has been a fall family hotspot for 25 years.
Because you can pick your own apples, we've got entertainment and enjoying Mother Nature at her finest.
That's Cindy Femling. 25 years ago, Cindy and her husband were on the lookout for an apple orchard, and they bought this one because it wasn't like the rest.
At that time, this was the only pick your own. So then we came out and looked at it. I never got out of the van. I just let him walk around and stuff. We went home and talked about it and thought it would be a really great place to raise our kids. And that's what started the whole thing, is change of pace for the kids to be out in the country and enjoy it.
Education is a big part of why the Femlings wanted to run a pick-your-own apple orchard.
Really nobody else was doing it, and we just thought it was a good thing for the public to know that apples come off a tree, not a bush or on the ground or whatever.
Cindy says it's not just adults that benefit from the reminder that our food doesn't grow at the grocery store.
A lot of education. We do about 15,000 kids through here in the fall on tours, school tours. A lot of these inner city kids have never been out of within a block or two of their home, and then they come on a bus and come out here and they really get out to enjoy things, and they pick apples actually on their tour and they play in the playground and just really enjoy it.
I think the kids learn a lot when they come to apple orchards.
That's Terry Bath. He and his wife Donna have been visiting the Afton apple orchard for the past 8 years. Along with spending time at the orchard with her grandson, they like visiting a few times a year for a different reason.
And we like the cider brats. It's a bratwurst that's made out of apples.
Right when you get to Afton, the first thing you see is the shop, where you can sample tons of different apples and order from a menu that includes cider brats and pretty much any other apple dish you can think of.
Can I get an apple pie square and two apple fritters?
Right. Anything else?
That's it.
Although running an apple orchard sounds like a sweet and carefree place to work, which most of the time it is, Cindy says it can be just like any other business trying to keep up with the demands of a very needy public.
Sometimes the public can be hard to handle. They get kind of destructive and they expect more and more entertainment when it's actually about the apple picking and being out with Mother Nature.
It's hard to believe the public would expect more entertainment than is already in place at Afton. Once your hand is stamped and you walk through the gates, you see a huge hayride full of kids and adults that takes them on a ride throughout the orchard. They've even got a kids-only tractor ride that weaves them in and out of trees as a way to add a little bit more excitement to the whole nature thing. There's also a petting zoo where kids can pay a quarter to feed hungry llamas and goats. And of course, there's a playground complete with a gigantic tube swing. And a mountain of tires to climb on. Oh, and a corn maze with 6 miles of winding paths to explore. Despite the practical circus of attractions necessary to draw a crowd out of the city and into nature, Cindy says global climate change might affect the amount of time the orchard can be open to the public this year.
This year, for example, things are running late because of the late spring we had and all the rain we had. And things aren't ripening as fast because now we've got cool weather already and we still should be really warm in September.
As the hayride carted groups of people around the orchard, you could see signs of fruit that was running late. Yellow tape hugged the rows of trees that customers were supposed to avoid because they weren't ready yet. Even the famed Honeycrisp apple wasn't ready, leaving some customers disappointed. But even though global climate change is affecting crops like the apples at Afton, unpredictable weather won't stop Cindy from enjoying what she loves most about running an orchard.
For the most part, I really enjoy the people, and I've watched kids grow up, and now they're having families, and seeing that over all the years. We've got a few bad apples in the bunch, but most of them are really good, and they appreciate what we're doing out here.
For Culture Q, I'm Katie Bolin.
Live in the studio, we have here Katie Bolin.
Hey, everybody.
How you doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm good. I like that apple pun to end the...
I can't believe she did it. I didn't know if she was going to make any apple puns.
I mean, you'd hope so. The whole day of the apple orchard, like, at least one would suffice. And
I bet she has so many. Maybe she has a book at home of apple puns that she's written and she just saves them.
Oh, goodness, I hope not. how was your day at the apple orchard? Like, why did you want to do this story?
It was beautiful. The weather was perfect. It was packed because it was a Sunday. And I just wanted to explore a fall tradition, and also I've never been to a proper apple orchard. My friend and roommate Abby, her parents' house has an apple orchard on it, but it's really small and it's just a family, solely a family thing.
So this was the real deal, like, you know, there
this
was so
was
much
the real deal.
Yeah, there's so much to like be kind of admired of, like just like the selection of apples, and so much was going on as well. Like, do you feel like there's a lot of like family value to it?
Yeah. There were tons of families there that have come year after year, so it's a huge tradition personally for families too.
And will you make a tradition of it yourself?
Maybe. The Honeycrisps were not ready yet, though, and that's kind of disappointing because those are the best apples ever.
It's like October, though. Like, when do they?
They're supposed to be the last month or the last week of September, but like she said, the weather kind of messed everything up this year. So.
Next
the
time.
Weather, come on.
It's always that damn weather.
Yeah.
But well, thank you, Katie, for doing the story.
Well, thank you.
Is there anything else you want to say about the story? Anything you would
it
recommend?
It was awesome. The pets were my favorite part, because there was a petting zoo, so you could feed animals, and that was really fun because they just licked everything out of your hand. It was gross and cool.
Sounds disgusting.
Yeah.
Thank you, Katie.
Thank you.
Paul Robinson was just 18 when he was touring with the likes of Zedd and Skrillex, but it was then he visited the Skyway Theatre in 2011, and I experimented with my first electronic dance concert. The 3 years on, Paul Robinson has reinvented the style and broadened the horizons of EDM, bringing beauty back into the beats and performance back into the shows. I had the chance to speak to him about the tour, the album, and the beauty of the music. Hey, Paul, how's it going, man?
Yeah, not too bad. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no worries, no worries.
So, you're just about a month into the world's tour. How's that all going so far?
Quite well, I think. I mean, I think it's there's a lot of, I think, challenges that I face just inherently in doing a tour like this. I mean, I have 3 years of history of touring around as a DJ, virtually no experience as a singer or a live performer, but I mean, I essentially dedicated the last 6 months of my life being off tour to making this show as awesome as it could possibly be, in the programming and in making new versions of the song for the show and directing the visuals, which was a monster effort. I totally can't underplay that. I've definitely gotten this show to a place where I'm like, It is. It's like my dream show.
The album is an experience in itself, but, I mean, what are you actually adding to the live show?
Well, I am singing. I'm playing. I trigger like drum samples. So I've got an electronic drum kit that I play. I play chords. I have two synthesizers on stage. I trigger the lead melodies. So like, for example, in Sad Machine, I have to, if I don't play the keys, it's not going to go, na, 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 na. You know, that, yeah, I mean, I think I was definitely referencing my idols shows like Daft Punk's Alive show and Justice's Across the Universe show, which were both essentially just multi-track shows without actual live instrumentation. And I just wanted to push that a little further.
I mean, both great examples of extraordinary dance music performances. And honestly, mate, it's so respectable. Like, you know, you're trying to like do it all live and everything, because there's so much shtick about, you know, dance music all being kind of, you know, programmed. But the fact that you're trying to take things on live is really respectable. What kind of response have you received from that?
Just so positive. I mean, I think that there's this mentality that is, there's a real, I think, cynicism that has come about among EDM fans, and I think that a lot of people are starting to maybe feel like they're wising up and maybe scrutinizing the sort of top 10 a little bit more. And I just think that people are eager for something new and different. I mean, it feels so good to only be playing originals, you know. I just imagine how disappointed I would be if I went to go see Kanye West or Daft Punk and it was 90% cover songs, because that's essentially what a DJ set is. I wanted to hear my own favorite artists play their own music, and so that, I mean, I think that is pretty central to the inspiration behind the song.
Absolutely. I'm so glad it's paying off for you. I'm really happy that the effort that you put in there is really rewarded. I actually saw you supporting Skrillex in Minnesota back in 2011, I think it must have been. Were you like 19 back then?
Yeah, I was like either 18 or 19. I was very young. Jeez. For sure.
You were younger than I am right now. I mean, that's like mind blowing to me. what kind of growth have you seen in yourself since those early days?
I think that, you know, if there was any lesson that I learned from Skrillex, he was the one who always encouraged me to try to be as honest as possible in my music and really put a premium on authenticity. And that lesson, I mean, has stuck with me for years, and it's something that I've gradually been trying to improve upon and to work towards being more and more authentic and more sincere in the stuff that I make. I think that it's particularly unflattering to look at my 2011 EDM from a 2014 perspective, because, I mean, I just don't think that the genre was this massive cliche that it now is at that time. And I think a lot of the moves that I was using, kind of like trancey breakdowns and trancey buildups, were not at all central in EDM back then, and they totally have become that. You know, they, almost every big room EDM song does those exact moves now, which it was totally not a big thing back then. Also my taste changed, you know, because it's, and I don't think anyone's the exact same person they were 4 years ago.
I mean, I can see where you were talking about, like, the cliches of the genre now becoming solidified, but, I mean, all kind of EDM seems to have, like, the sinister undertone, very focusing on the bass, but Worlds, the entire album, just seems quite the opposite. Like, the leads are very bright and the melodies are enticing. What was behind this change in style for you?
You know, I wrote a song called Language, I think, in 2012, and it was just a single, but it was the first song that I'd released that wasn't sinister and wasn't, you know, quite as heavy and focused more on being beautiful. And when I wrote that song, it definitely touched me and felt important to me, and it was absolutely so fun to write that song. And then it came out, and it did so well. Just, you know, I was expecting a backlash against it, which seems silly now, but at that time, I wasn't expecting the massive response, and I think that was vindicating to me and made me consider this idea of trying to pursue, you know, really beautiful music, I guess, full time.
I remember when Language dropped on Zane Lowe's show on Radio 1. And I was like, new music in Port Robinson. And then I was like, where's the drop? I was like, oh no, it was kind of funny just to see like the such a sudden change. I mean, in that musical context, just the one song. I mean, if it feels like we're running out of time, which is unfortunate because I have so much to ask you. But I guess my final question would be, what would you say to someone who hasn't picked up the album yet? Like, what would you say to them to make them listen to it?
Man, I'm not great at selling myself or trying to convince, I think, anyone to do anything. it's my favorite. I've been making music for 10 years, and it's my favorite thing I've ever done as an artist, the most important thing I've ever done. And it's, yeah, I mean, I think it's my own best material. Maybe that would convince somebody to give it a shot.
I hope so. All right. Well, best luck on the tour in North America, Australia, and Europe. You're going to kill it. And unfortunately, I missed the show in Minnesota. I broke my collarbone that day, so I had to...
Oh, my God.
I was so good. I was on the list and everything. I was so ready for it, but well, next time, I suppose. Well, I hope you had a great show in Minnesota anyway, and best luck with the rest of the tour. Thank you so much for talking to me, Porter Robinson. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you.
All the best. Take care. In the studio we have here Sam Siegel, copywriter for Radio K, here to talk about the weekly release spotlight, the album in which we highlight every week, and you can download a free track and read the review of. What is it this week, Sam?
This week it is the album At Best Cuckold by Avi Buffalo. It's their second record. Last one of theirs came out in 2010, I want to say. It was a self-titled record. Back then, Avi Buffalo, which is led by Avi Zahner Eisenberg, was 19 when that record came out, and now he's all grown up, a whole 23 years old.
It was 4 years ago.
Yeah, it was 4 years ago. They've kind of laid low since that first record came out. They were kind of hot young up and comers. The album's on Sub Pop, which is pretty big deal for a 19-year-old. And he's mostly just been, he toured a couple times with that record, but he's mostly just been hanging out in Laurel Canyon in L.A. Writing just tons and tons of music, trying to put together the best songs for this record that just came out.
So would you say this is a... Would you say the first one was a coming-of-age record, or this one?
I would say the first one wasn't necessarily a coming-of-age record. It was more just this pubescent ball of youthful energy. It was kind of... There were a lot of songs sort of about... horny angst, for lack of a better term, and this record still got a little bit of that, but it's definitely much more mature. It's about someone trying to figure out how to have adult relationships and sort of deal with this feeling of quarter life crisis or ennui. I don't know how else to say it.
Would you say that the songwriting is as matured as well as the artists themselves?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like I said, the lyrical content's a lot more mature, and I feel like the production overall as well. I mean, that the last album, it was complex. There was some really well put together, well crafted indie pop songwriting, but on here they've got much bigger ambitions, I would say. They're bringing in a lot more instruments than just the core guitar, bass, drums. They've got some orchestral arrangements on a couple of songs. They've got a bunch more piano. Just the overall production technique is more complex, but I actually think it works. I mean, that's one of the things that on a sophomore slump can kind of happen, where a band gets a way bigger budget and then they become totally bloated. Where on this album, they use it pretty strategically.
Well, great. Which song would you like to hear from the album?
Let's do the song Overwhelmed with Pride. I really like this one. It's got kind of a spacey folk sound that actually sounds like directly out of Laurel Canyon, where he was recording it. Like, sounds like late 60s Buffalo Springfield or CSNY or something. And it's this great, it's almost this romantic nature song, but at the same time, the chorus ultimately says, and I'm relatively inconspicuously overwhelmed with pride, which is just this great shrug. I love it.
Fantastic. Here it is right now on Radio K's Culture Cube. Thank you, as always, Sam.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
to follow me. These tunnels and seas, and these birds seem so fucking free. They're nothing compared to me.
Once again, Overwhelmed with Pride by Avi Buffalo from the album At Best Cuckold. You can go onto RadioK.org and download a free track from the album, as well as read the review from Sam Siegel.
In light of the last week being full of rain and dark clouds overhead, Soundscope this week will take you through four songs to get you through dark nights, rainy weeks, and consist of Keeping Your Eyes on the Sky. The local hip-hop supergroup Dino Spectrum, consisting of Slug of Atmosphere, Beyond, Swift of Full Circle, and I Self Divine of the Micronauts, put only one self-titled record out. Armor is a track full of eerie dark sounds and witty twisted lines, producing my favorite song to accompany a dark drive through a rainy night.
Whenever I touch your hand, I expand inside your mental van. Follow through like hated chain command. Saran wrapping your plan and suffocate. Vividly illustrate exodus through visions of cannabis sativa. Elder Creeper type of moves. I'm over soldier, bending your back like scoliosis attack. Veteran underground.
Hey.
The classic intro to Led Zeppelin's When the Levee Breaks is one of my favorites. After a week of consistent rain, sometimes you have to wonder, when is it ever going to stop? When the Levee Breaks is my song for those rainy weeks.
If it keeps on raining, levee's going to break. If it keeps on raining, levee's going to break. When the levee breaks, have no place to stay.
The Temple's Colors to Life is not a song that deals with the rainy day in a figurative or literal sense, but lead singer Jame Bagshaw's smooth vocals over the song's dreary tones fits the mood of many rainy or cloudy days. Soft Machine is a band that could be interpreted many different ways. Hope for Happiness is just as versatile as the band, and for me, the song has many uses. On those rainy days when the sky is just about to clear up and you know the sun's right behind that last cloud, Hope for Happiness fits the bill. For Culture Cube, I'm Aaron Bolton.
You've been listening to Radio K. This is Culture Cube, airing every Sunday at 6 p.m., bringing you all the stories from Minnesota you won't hear anywhere else. Tonight you heard the voice of Aaron Bolton, Kitty Bolin, Sam Siegel, and Matthew Kudas. Our producers are Parker Lemke and Kitty Bolin. Our music reporter is Aaron Bolton. Our culture coach is Sarah Lemanchek. I'm your host and managing editor, Matthew Kudas. You can find us on RadioK.org, PRX, and iTunes. You can join us on Facebook. Just search Culture Q. Support for this program comes from the Minnesota Arts and Culture Heritage Fund. See you next Sunday at 6 p.m. Thank you for listening.